Hello and welcome to Geek Culture Online. I'm Patrick Bolin, and I would like to start off this episode before we get started with a little bit of housekeeping. Now, the reason for the delays of this season's episodes were a theft of all my equipment. This happened in late December, early January. I'm not going to get any specifics because it's still an ongoing case with the police. Everything that pertaining to our this website and the podcast were taken. But now we're back on schedule, and the podcast will be on a brand new schedule. They will be released every Wednesday. Now there's with the new schedule, we're going to have a new format, which is going to be a three segmented podcast. We're going to break the podcast into three pieces instead of having just one major subject. Obviously, this will change, with as things go. But another piece of housekeeping is that we are going to be looking for artists and musicians to produce segments for music bumps, art for our social media, and merchandise designs. We're looking for people to volunteer for stuff like this, or going to be low cost because we're going to be promoting you as payment. We're going to be needing things like music for the opening of the podcast and closing of the podcast, and then music bumps, as they're called, to throw to commercials and to come back from commercials. Now, if anybody is really interested in doing things like this, you can go to our website, geekculture.online, see where we're going with this. You can go to our Facebook page and things like that. We're going to need graphics for all of those things. Now, you can reach us at Geek Culture Online, Facebook at Geek Culture Online with no period. The Twitter is Your Geek Culture, and our Instagram is at Geek Culture Online. Now you can email me directly at Patrick at geekculture.online if you have ideas or if you need any more questions, and I'll get back to you as soon as I possibly can. Now, back to the podcast itself. Now, welcome to geekculture.online, your destination of all things geek. I'm your host and CEO and head geek, Patrick Bolin. Today's theme for this episode is going to be all things old or new again. Now, that will be explained in a minute. Now, today we're going to be digging around in a segment called Long Box for past comic book issues. We're also going to be bringing up a movie about a past TV show and its sequels that are hopefully coming up. And we're going to be talking about a new season of a TV show, which is about an old TV show from the 90s. As you can see, all things are new again. I am here with Larry Wojcicki, which will bring his views of all things old and new again as well. Now on with the show. Now, what we're going to do is we have a stack of comics here, and we're just going to randomly pick one. We're going to talk about that one. Now, we have this price wheel with numbers on there 1 through 24, and we're going to spin it a couple of times, and the number it lands on is going to pertain to a comic book that we have here.
Can
Now,
I pick Patrick?
pick the comic?
Yes.
No, we're going to randomly do this.
Okay,
So
that's fine.
we're
All
going to have to
right.
go by memory or
All
what we
right.
know about things,
It's your
and
show.
okay, here we go. Now with this wheel, let's see. No, not gonna. Don't like that number. Don't like that issue. And nope, not that one either. Let's give this one more spin. And
Come on, Patrick.
no. Just want to get it lined up so I get what I want. And there we go. That's the one I wanted. Now, what we're going to do here is it landed on a comic book, Archer and Armstrong. That's from Valiant. Now, Valiant is an American publisher of comic books. They started back in 92, and nowadays, since it's restarted, they also are going into different other related medias, and we're going to talk about that too. The company was founded in 1989 by, at that time, Marvel's editor-in-chief Jim Shooter and his friend, who was a lawyer and businessman, Steve Marsars Mar
Masarsky.
Marmarsky.
Masarsky.
Marmarsky. Close enough.
Masarsky.
Okay, close enough. But and see, Marvel at the time in the 90s was under a lot of financial strain. So in 94, Yeah, in the 90s, Jim Shooter tried to buy Marvel, couldn't. So he started Valiant Comics. And in 94, the company, as it was known then, Valiant, was sold to Acclaim Entertainment. Now, through the 90s, they struggled and struggled and struggled, and they declared bankruptcy in 2004. In 2005, the company ceased publication. In 2004 it ceased publication. In 2005, it was restarted as part of Valiant Entertainment by, this name is terrible, and I'm going to try to get it right anyway. Larry, go ahead.
I can say it. By entrepreneurs Dinesh Shamdasani and Jason Kothari in 2005.
Boom. All right.
You're welcome.
All right.
Anyway, so I'll jump in here since I have a little info for you. So Valiant Entertainment relaunched its publishing division in 2012 while receiving numerous awards in the following years. In 2015, Valiant announced that they had partnered with Sony Pictures to produce five films based on both the Bloodshot and Harbinger comic books. The films will be produced by Valiant's Dinesh Shamdasani, along with the original films Neil H. Moritz and Toby Jaffe. Okay. Sounds good.
Yes, yes. Now, what's really awesome about this comic book is that it had some of the biggies in the industry that started Valiant and worked on the comic book. Now, it was written and drawn by Barry Windsor Smith. Everybody knows Barry Windsor Smith about the miniseries that he did about Machine Man for Marvel in the 90s. Very influential. Now, when Acclaim Entertainment purchased the rights of all the Valiant characters back in 94 because of their bankruptcy, they bought it for $65 million. The characters did continue to appear in tons of Valiant titles. Mostly, when the comic books, when everything went bankrupt, then it collapsed down to the Internal Warrior series.
Yeah, and what happened, Patrick, is then Acclaim rebooted the Archer and Armstrong characters to make them more easily adaptable to video games. Okay. Valiant Entertainment is the current owner of the Valiant catalog, including Archer and Armstrong.
Okay. Now, in 92, the characters had a different origin than they do now when it was rebooted. Now, Archer, his first name was
Obadiah.
Obadiah. Who in 92 was a martial art expert who was trained for almost 8 years in a Buddhist monastery in Ladakh,
India. Yes.
He had been observed to have excellent control over the way his body moves when he went to that monastery. And then he's able to execute difficult moves flawlessly each time he makes it, almost like a physical memory. You know, it's just like a photographic physical memory.
Very cool.
Is also an excellent marksman with a bow and arrow, and that's what he always carries around. That's what you always see in the comic books. He has that or a sword, and he is also has kind of like a mini crossbow he welded, and that I do believe that is in the video game itself. And under optimal conditions, he can hit any target within 100 yards. He has also exceptionally good night vision, which is tested or shown in the comic books, and I believe it was issue 16 that showed that. Oh, and now Armstrong, whose real name is Aram, he's a 10,000-year-old immortal who possesses superhuman strength, near invulnerability, and the ability to heal quickly from his injuries. Now, he is impervious to fire and can easily survive gunshots to the body, though it's extremely painful. His face, however, is more vulnerable and will bleed, but his fast healing abilities mitigates this. He does not know why he has stopped aging or why he's immortal.
Yeah, and with Armstrong, he carries a satchel that plays an important part of the first storyline of the 92 series. This satchel contains a variety of mysterious, interesting artifacts, Patrick, that Armstrong has accumulated throughout history, including, according to Armstrong, the mysteries of the ancient worlds. I believe the Eye of the Sphinx. Sorry, I got tripped up.
Yeah.
And the Trinkets of the Gods, the Holy Grail, and the universes within universes, or as he would say, the very secrets of life itself. When it is held by someone other than Armstrong, though, it causes those around them to obey their every wish, although this is not true for Armstrong.
Which is very strange. And this is the McGowan, the
MacGuffin. MacGuffin.
That they use through the issues. And the issue we're going to talk about kind of starts that. The satchel has an unlimited capacity, and it never increases in weight or sustains any damage or wear. Armstrong refuses to reveal how he found the satchel. He himself does not fully know what the satchel contains, because when presented with the wand of Cyrus by
Mahmoud,
who had the satchel at one point, Armstrong was unfamiliar with it. He remembers putting in some of the items, but usually it's the other items that were just deposited there during his frequent drunken stupors were later forgotten by him. It's almost like a carrying TARDIS.
Yeah, yes. That's what it sounds like.
Yes. The first Archer and Armstrong series premiered in 92. It was published by Valiant Comics. The first issue was Zero. Zero wasn't the first issue that came out, though. Then they put, this was a part of a storyline that was called Unity, and they crossed over all their titles. But issue Zero is kind of like how they got together. It was a regular standalone issue that told the origins of the team up. Issues 1 and 2 are part of the crossover storyline with Unity, which were written by Jim Shooter and Barry Windsor Smith and Bob Layton. Bob Layton is a very famous writer and artist. He's been with Marvel since the early 70s, but his most famous run is in Iron Man. And
I know that name. Yes, from Iron Man. Yes.
And every time I go to C2E2, he's usually there in Chicago. He does not live in Chicago. Now he lives in Florida.
Okay.
But he was one of the founding members of Valiant. And I always hit him up for suggestions, because he uses a quill to ink with, but he shaves one side of it, and it's a number 7, and he shaves it, so it gives it more of a brush thing. I did not know that. But anyway, from here, from there, issues 3 through 12 formed a series of initial storylines which built up the whole thing, which was written by Windsor Smith, who also drew all the issues except for 7 and 9. At that point, I do believe that was because of the time period, it was on the Machine Man miniseries that was going on at the same time he was doing for Marvel. The storyline established the recurring enemy of the sect, an international secret society that infiltrated most of the world's significant governments and religious organizations.
Okay, yeah, and the storyline also established the importance of the magical satchel that Armstrong carries around him at all times, which was the storyline's MacGuffin. The series ran until 1994, its final issue being number 26. Mm-hmm. Valiant Entertainment began a new series written by Fred Van Lente and was illustrated by Clayton Henry in August 2012. The original series, 1992 series, which is the original, was first collected in 2008 as a deluxe hardcover and in 2016 as a complete omnibus of the run.
Now, I don't have the 2016 version. I have seen the 2008 version. I do believe that not only is there a hardcover, but there's a soft cover of that, and it is fabulous because it has sections in there that show kind of more than just the storyline.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's an Archer Armstrong First Impressions, which collects Archer and Armstrong issues 0 through 6. Then there's Archer and Armstrong The Complete Classic Omnibus, which in that collects Archer and Armstrong issues 0 through 26. Also, The Eternal Warrior, which was from 1992 to 96, number 25. Chaos Effect Omega from 1994. And The Story of the Formation of the Sect, that's all from January 2016, which is by Valiant Entertainment. A lot in there.
Now, yeah, it really is, because now that kind of gives ties the whole thing together. But keep in mind that they rebooted everything in 2012 when the series came back. Now, there's been some new information since we researched Valiant. Now, it was reported on the web from several different sources that Valiant was purchased by DMG Entertainment. Now, that company, at the time of the bankruptcy and the rebooting, owned a little over half, almost 57% of Valiant. They went ahead and purchased the rest of it. Now they own the whole kit and caboodle. And that company, DMG Entertainment, is based out of Beijing.
Now, really?
Yes. Now the thing is, now that they've did all this, the Dinesh
Shamdasani
is kind of been is going to be phased out.
He's really?
Gonna, yeah, he was the CEO and CCO of Valiant at that time. He's kind of going to be moved out, and he'll be leaving the company. As far as it's been reported, nothing will change with the publishing part, and I'm putting air quotes there. But the company wants to focus on a bigger picture of different media, such as video games, movie, and TV shows. Now, since our first research of this, they kind of spewed out a whole bunch of more information. We talked about five movies. There's going to be two Bloodshots, two Hairbringers. There's a Shadow Man movie coming out, an Exo Man of War, then the Archer and Armstrong one. That's why we want to talk about Archer and Armstrong today, is because there is going to be an Archer and Armstrong movie. Ooh! Yes, and then the new ones in 2012 when they came out with new titles. One was called Quantum and Woody. Now, shocking one, I don't know why they chose this, but on the CW, there's going to be a TV series from a comic book from 92. It was called The Second Life of Dr. Mirage. I collected and read all of these back in the 90s. I have almost a complete run. Now, I was very shocked. You know, I really couldn't get into The Second Life of Dr. Mirage at the beginning.
Really?
Yes. It was hard for me to, you know, I couldn't get into it. Near the end of the run, I started really getting into it, and I was sorry to see it go. But why they chose that one out of this big catalog of characters they have as a TV series, I really don't know.
Well, I mean, Patrick, you know, I was, you know, when you told me about the sale to DMG, I did a little research myself, you know, online, and I found out, and this is to my, I did not know this, you know, obviously we're all familiar with DC Comics, we're familiar with, you know, Marvel Entertainment, but believe it or not, Valiant Entertainment is the third largest superhero universe out there. Amount of characters. So, I mean, they have a lot to, you know, to mine, so to speak, either be TV shows, movies,
video games,
et cetera, et cetera. But here's the fun fact. Even though they're the third largest superhero character universe, they're only less than 1% of all sales.
Which is very interesting because right now I don't know who, if they're always exchanging places. It's either Marvel or DC, but those are the two mega ones. They're the Disney of comic books.
Right. I mean, I don't know the numbers. I mean, maybe you know, but I think Marvel's bigger than DC Comics.
Well, actually, right now, DC has kind of taken the lead on that. Marvel is kind of struggling a little bit because for the people that don't read comic books, DC started this first. You know, Marvel and DC have been around since the 40s. Marvel in the 40s was called Timely Comics for both at the time. DC was around since the 40s too. After 50 or 60 years of comic books and storylines and everything, DC back in 1986 decided to reboot their universe. They said everybody, you know, everybody is kind of like stale and everything. And late 80s, early 90s, all comic book sales were struggling. So DC erased all the continuity and started over, saying like, we're going to start everything over again. And it was done with a miniseries that was written and drawn by John Byrne called The Man of Steel. That's where the universe started over. Marvel kind of did a soft reboot in the 90s a little bit and tried to emulate that. And they're like, wow, their sales shot up because of that. And both of them kind of really, really were struggling in the 90s, and they did stupid things like foil covers and alternate covers and limited edition covers, and then nothing was really working, and Marvel almost went bankrupt in the 90s. That's when Marvel started shedding all their products by selling all their characters to all these major studios. That's another story. Now, right now, to kind of jump forward, DC has a bigger following because they've rebooted their universe twice more since 86. They did it 10 years ago called The New 52. 2 years ago, it's been 2 years now. Wow. They did it again because nobody liked what they did, and it was called The Rebirth. And bam-o! Everything went through the ceiling because they got rid of The New 52, went back to the old stuff, and said, okay, we learned our lesson. Yeah, and so Then Marvel's kind of struggling. So right now, I'd say in the last 3 months, DC's ahead of the game.
Okay. I thank you for that. I did not know that. I just assumed with all the movies and those properties, Marvel's on top.
Marvel is on top with movies. They've
Okay.
done it right. They've done it perfectly right. That's another story.
Right, for another time.
Yeah,
Right, and
but
right.
DC is struggling in their media. Marvel isn't. But on the other hand, Marvel's struggling with their comic books. So now, what we're going to try to do is we're going to focus on a lot of back issues and stuff like this going forward, because there's a lot of good stuff out there that people just really don't know about.
I agree.
All right. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to flip over to the movies.
All right, great.
All right, well, and now we're back. Now, for our next segment, we're going to jump to the silver screen.
Movies.
Yeah, movies. Now, we're going to talk about one that was made in 2015, and it was The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yes.
Now, this is based on a TV series from the early 1960s. That the premise of the TV series and the movies is that CIA agent Napoleon Solo and KGB agent Operative Ilya
Kraken.
Kraken participate in a joint mission against a mysterious criminal organization which is working to proliferate nuclear weapons. Now, this was written and directed by Guy Ritchie. It was based on a story by Jeff Lemon and also David C. Wilson and Lionel Wigram. And now, the TV series was based. Off the movie is based off of the TV series, which was done by Sam Rolf. Rolf?
Rolf, I would
Rolf.
say. Yeah,
Okay.
yeah. So yeah, Patrick, I mean, and I love the movie. I mean, I'm a big James Bond fan, so it kind of goes with
Oh,
it.
yes.
But The Man from U.N.C.L.E., like you said, is a 2015 American action spy comedy film directed by Guy Ritchie, who I love myself as well,
There
written
you
by
go.
Ritchie and Lionel Wigram. It is based on the 1964 MGM television series of the same name, which is created by Ian Fleming.
Did you know? Did
No,
anybody know
I did not
that?
know that. I did not know that until we were researching this, really.
Yeah.
Again, hence the James Bond thing.
Yes.
Anyway, the TV series was created by Ian Fleming, Norman Felton, and Sam Rolfe. Again, the film stars, and it's a massive cast of
Oh,
stars:
yes.
Henry Cavill, Armie Hammer, Alicia Vikander, Elizabeth Debicki, Jared Harris, and of course, the very charming Hugh
Of
Grant.
course.
The film was produced by Rat Pack Dune Entertainment and Davis Entertainment. I love the film. I thought it was fantastic. Again, I love these spy movies, but it has a twist.
It does have a major twist, and the music is fantastic too. And now, in 93, a little back history and how this thing got off the ground. This has been kicking around in Hollywood since 93. John Davis obtained the rights to the film based on the original series. Now, however, the film fell into developmental hell, like most things do, due to multiple script rewrites. It just was being, nobody liked what was being done. So now, over the years, Matthew Vaughn, David Dobkin and Steven Soderbergh were optioned to direct until Ritchie signed on in March of 2013. Now the film premiered in Barcelona on August 2nd, 2015, and was released on August 14th by Warner Brothers. Now there was a million people that were offered the roles there. Now
I do remember this. I do remember this happening. So I mean, November 2010, George Clooney, I mean, he showed a lot of interest in the film, and I remember reading about that, and was talks for the lead role of Napoleon Solo,
Which would have been interesting.
which would have been really interesting, is especially when he did The American, which I love The
Oh,
American.
I
That's
thought
a
that was really
I
good.
have that I own that. I love that movie. But he left in September 2011 due to a recurring back injury. So after Clooney's departure, actors included Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Ryan
That
Gosling,
would have been wild.
right, Blade Runner 2049, right?
Yes.
Channing Tatum, Alexander Skarsgård, Ewan McGregor, Robert Pattinson, Matt Damon, Christian Bale, Michael Fassbender, Bradley Cooper, Leonardo
Of
DiCaprio,
course.
right? Joe Kinnaman, Russell Crowe, Chris Pine, Ryan Reynolds, and John Hamm were all considered for this leading role.
Now that would have been interesting.
John Hamm would have been very interesting. Yeah.
Just I mean, think about how that film would have been so different with him in there.
It would have been, I think, would have been more funnier. I think I've been more like, well, I think, yeah. Where Ryan Reynolds Steakhouse? Is that the one in South Africa? Mm-hmm. I loved him in that movie with Denzel Washington. So Ryan Reynolds has those serious spy chops. Anyway, that's just me. And I love that movie. I saw it 3 times in the theater. Wow. Anyway, on March 18, 2013, Tom Cruise was even in early talks to take the lead in the film, which would have really changed it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and he probably would have wanted more control of the film.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. And I don't think Guy Ritchie would have liked that, but that's just my opinion. Yeah. Anyway, Armie Hammer was cast in the second lead role as Ilya Kuryakin on April 24th, 2013, with Cruise set as Solo. Mm-hmm. Then Swedish actress Alicia Vikander, who's now doing the reboot of Lara Croft Tomb Raider, coming soon, right?
Yes.
Saw those previews, joined the film on May 8th, 2013 as a female lead. Mm-hmm. On May 23rd, 2013, Cruise dropped out of the film due to his commitment of Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which I loved.
It was a good one.
Anyway, British actor Henry Cavill replaced Cruise. Elizabeth Debicki was cast in as the femme fatale role on July 31st, 2013. Rose Byrne and Charlize Theron were earlier considered in the same part.
Yeah, that would have been. I don't think she would have really brought for that role.
Yeah, I mean, Rose Byrne is a good actress, and not her. Charlize Theron, though, she can play badass. So
yes, like in the Alien film that
Charlize Theron was also, remember, she was in Mad Max Fury Road. She was really the lead in that movie, and
Atomic Blonde,
which is, oh my god. Yeah, I mean, if you can't think she can do action movies, she can do action movies. Please, people. Anyway, but on August 8th, 2013, Hugh Grant joined the cast as Alexander Waverly, the head of the United Network Command for Law and Enforcement.
Hence, Uncle.
Exactly. Which I didn't know what that meant. I really didn't know right until I saw the movie. And then Jared Harris was cast as Sanders on September 4th, 2013. And Luca Calvani was cast as a villain, Alexander. Simona Caparini was also cast to play Contessa.
Now, think of what would have been or could have been and how it worked out. Now, there are some interesting parts of, as well, because now that they've locked down the cast, but this is different. This is so interesting about this.
Absolutely. I think the other, now that, obviously I've seen the movie and I do love the movie, but if I start putting in Tom Cruise or Ryan Reynolds, that changes the whole feel and the vibe of it. It honestly, for me, I mean, this is a good period piece. It's the 60s. It's the skirts. It's the bright colors. It's the 60s music. And I love those kind of movies when they're pulled off properly.
Yes.
But when it's kind of like they kind of cut and paste, like Tom Cruise wouldn't fit in that. He wouldn't fit. I'm sorry. I don't see him doing that, because I see him in, modern roles. Mission Impossible stuff. That's not him.
The 60s is in the wrong time period for him.
Absolutely. In my opinion, absolutely.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that, I actually have some trivia about the film. Okay. I think all the listeners and you, Patrick, please, would be interesting. Please. So Elizabeth Debicki, an Australian actress portraying a woman from Liverpool in England, but with a deliberately clipped RP or standard English accent, noted, "So few of us are playing our nationalities."
Very true.
Right. Indeed, Henry Cavill, who is a Brit, plays an American.
Which is funny.
Armie Hammer, is an American playing a Russian.
Yeah.
And Vikander is a Swede who plays a German. All of which is added to the international air of the production in concert with the various locations in England and Italy, where the production filmed.
Isn't that so weird? Is that, that they could have, the American could have played the American, but no, everything was like, they went by, no, we're going to put you in where where we think you're going to be best, and the chemistry worked.
But isn't that kind of Guy Ritchie-esque? I mean, Guy Ritchie kind of shakes things up. I mean, when I watched this movie recently, before, we talked about it, I've watched many Guy Ritchie movies, and it has a very different feel. Like the cutting, the editing is very, very nonconformist.
Well, that's interesting that you bring up the editing, because I was going to talk about that. It's just that the cinematography in this thing is insane, and the editing is very and very interesting too. It's just that when all there's like big shots where there's a lot of scenery, you get the picturesque of everything. But when there's a lot of action sequences, there's multiple screens or multiple cuts going on the screen.
Yes,
which reflects on what the TV show did.
Ah, okay. See, I didn't watch the TV show, so okay. But that is a very retro thing with the cut screens and the diagonals. Yes, which I enjoy that. I enjoy that because again, I didn't grow up with that in the 80s or 90s. Mm-hmm. I'd see it once in a while, but yeah. Again, this is very Guy Ritchie. I mean, he takes a franchise like the Sherlock Holmes movies, and that's another chapter for another time.
Oh yes.
But I love those two movies. But I mean, he took those and he almost turned them on their head.
Yes.
An American playing Sherlock Holmes, which is. That's very like taboo. Different.
It was a chance that worked.
It did. So yeah. So again, and Elizabeth Debicki. I mean, I'll just toss out there. I mean, that her last name is a Polish origin. So she's a Polish Australian actress like Mia Wasikowska of the Mad Hatter movies.
Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, she plays Alice, right? She's a Polish-Australian actress.
I wasn't aware of that.
Right, exactly. But she's playing an American character in a British novel.
Well, it would have been British, a British character.
That's right. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's right. But she has no. Does she have an accent in the movie?
Yes. But
she does.
But it's not. It's not a Cockney.
No, it's very American friendly.
Yes.
Anyway. So what about the sequel, Patrick?
Whoa, okay. Well, when this was finished, it really didn't do well in the States. Now, back until recently, for a movie to be justified as doing well, they only looked at the U.S. box office numbers, and it did very poorly here in the States. Overseas, it went insane. They did exceptionally well. Now, this was a low-budget film. I do, if I recall right, it was only a $74 million budget. It's above line. And they did that. They did everything well. And it was greenlit, as far as the internet's telling us, is that a sequel has been greenlit. The script has been done, and everybody wants to do it.
Well, look, at the end of the movie, and for all of you who haven't seen it, you should go out and see it right after you listen to this podcast, in my opinion. I mean, they set it up perfectly. You know, I mean you already know there's another mission coming.
Yeah.
And I was ready. I was ready for the next mission for the characters.
Well, yeah, you wanted to know more about these characters. You're like, oh, I want to see where this is going with them, because what you're able, and what's really funny is the website to the movie, which is manfromunclenospaces.com, is still active. You can go out there and you're able to click through it. It's very interactive. There's a lot of things on there, and that was so enjoyable to do that. Now, the music itself is available at Water Tower Music. Yeah, the music is still, you're still able to get it in CD. I don't know if it's available on vinyl. I would love to get it on vinyl, but watertower-music.com has this, so you're able to go out there and get it from them directly. I do have something that I posted on my Facebook page, is that I have a Spotify account that when I find something very interesting, is that I put together a playlist. Now, if you go to Geek Culture Online Facebook page, you're able to find the link to our Spotify page, and you're able to listen to the soundtrack.
Cool.
Of the movie. Yeah. Yeah. There's strangely enough, they didn't, through Spotify, there was three tracks missing from the album, but most of it's there. It's really enjoyable to listen to. So if you really like that music, boom, there you go.
Yeah. It was a very, very, the music really set the tone for that 60s period. I mean, there's the fashion, the cars, I get it, the Berlin Wall and stuff, but really without the music, it's kind of half of a movie, in my opinion.
To use this from my screenwriting teacher, is just that the music is almost another character.
Like Star Wars, right? I mean, or Indiana Jones. I mean, without Jaws. It's a movie itself.
Close Encounters,
absolutely. And again, so that's why I say Guy Ritchie, it is formulaic in a way, and I'm not going to say it isn't. At the same time, Guy Ritchie takes the spy genre formula of James Bond and truly, in my opinion, kind of twists it and turns it on its head, but in a fantastic way. If you haven't seen this movie, go out and rent it, buy it, see it. I recommend it.
Steal it if you have to.
Absolutely.
And now, if you want to see some behind-the-scenes things, Henry Cavill has a page or a channel on YouTube, and he's got a whole bunch of links of things that were like video. People were filming them going through their scenes, and there's a great one there. It's like one of the first things on his channel there, behind the scenes there. You can actually see them acting and filming Man from U.N.C.L.E. So if you're really into the behind the scenes stuff, that would be a great thing to go to.
Very cool. And that's that on the Facebook page, you said, Patrick?
Yeah, that's on his no, it's not on the Facebook page. I don't have that posted anywhere, but if you go to YouTube and do a search for Henry Cavill, he's got his own channel, and he's got a ton of videos on there. That's one of the top ones.
Cool, check it out, everybody.
All right, now what we're going to do is take another break, and we'll be right back with a very interesting TV series. Fantastic. We're back, and as we said before the break, we're going to be talking about a TV series. Now, in fact, what we're going to do is we're going to have Larry give you all the info about it.
Thanks, Patrick. And honestly, I haven't said this, but we've talked. X-Files is my second favorite TV show of all time.
Boom.
And again, you know, it faded away. It disappeared. I love the movies. I have both the movies. But for me, these new last two seasons are honestly literally off the charts. I mean, 5 out of 5 stars for me. Anyway, I'm sure you know it, but let's just give a little background for people who don't. Uh-huh. The X-Files is an American science fiction drama television series created by Chris Carter. The original television series aired from September 10th, 1993 to May 19th, 2002 on Fox. Mm-hmm. The program spanned 9 seasons with 202 episodes. A short 10th season consisting of 6 episodes premiered on January 24th, 2016, and Patrick, that renewed my faith in this TV show. The opening episode, and if you haven't seen it, was everything I wanted from X-Files. No joke. Following the ratings success of this revival, and I was in part of the ratings, Fox announced in April 2017 that the X-Files would be returning for an 11th season of 10 episodes. The season premiered on January 3rd, 2018, and I've seen all the episodes so far.
Awesome.
In addition to the TV series, 2 feature films which have been released, the 1998 film called The X-Files, but also was initially called X-Files Fight the Future.
It was called that?
It was called that, but I think they dropped that. I think that was kind of in the
plan. Was that on the VHS box?
Possibly, right? Possibly. Okay. Right, maybe it was, but right. I always remember as X-Files Fight the Future, but right, officially if you go online today onto Google or IMDb, it's just the X-Files.
Okay.
Anyway, that was the 1998 film, which took place as part of the TV series continuity.
Yes, so, it did continue. It picked up where it left off.
Correct. It was very important. It's a crucial part of the story.
Oh,
so,
yes.
So if you don't see that first movie, you're missing a big chunk of the X-Files, a backstory.
Yes.
And then there's the standalone film called X-Files I Want to Believe, which is released in 2008, 6 years after the original television run had ended. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I bought the second movie first because I did not see it at the theater because it didn't get very good reviews.
No, it did not.
Right. And again, I have a holistic approach about it. I like the story. It wasn't the, aliens landing, in New Mexico type story, but it still is kind of the X-Files genre.
Yes.
And so, remember, this is my second favorite TV show of all time. So I'm not gonna knock the second movie too much.
Yeah, but do you think the second movie kind of was pandering more to the thing, or instead of going kind of continuing, it was more pandering than continuing?
I mean, I love the show, so it's hard to knock the TV show in my opinion. Remember, I didn't like when David Duchovny, when Mulder left. I mean, honestly, at that point, I really stopped watching for a while.
It was hard to slog through that.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, I stuck it out too.
Okay. Right. But so for me, seeing David Duchovny, Gillian Anderson, Scully and Mulder together, to me, that's gold.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
With that chemistry, it's hard to work with.
Right. And then Billy Connolly's in the movie.
Yes.
Which I thought was fascinating. So it's a good cast. If you haven't seen the movie, everybody, listeners. You can rent it, and if you don't want to buy it, that's fine. Stream it.
Yes.
But again, if you love the X-Files, it's a nice standalone piece.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, no, it's not. They tried to make it a standalone because it really didn't continue from the first movie.
Right.
But, you know, it just, I think they went for the lowest common denominator on that one.
Well, and I'm going to toss this in, Patrick. We didn't talk about this, but remember, around 2008, there was a major writer's strike. In 2007, 2008, and maybe that somehow affected the script quality or whatever. I don't know, but I'm just...
Yeah, well, that's a good speculation. Maybe right. Maybe when we do an episode about behind-the-scenes stuff, we will
delve into that. Yeah, that's fine.
That's a very good idea.
I'm just thinking out loud because I remember that was an issue with Quantum of Solace with the James Bond movies. Mm-hmm. And again, people didn't like Quantum of Solace. I loved it. But again, it was the least rated Daniel Craig movie. Mm. Anyway, but back to X-Files.
Oh, okay. The series revolved around the FBI, Special Agents Fox Mulder, and Dana Scully and Gillian Anderson. Oh.
I'm still in love with her.
You know, she's single now, so hey, she's available.
Okay.
Who investigates the X-Files, which is a marginalized unsolved cases involving the paranormal phenomenon. Now, Mulder believes in the existence of the aliens and paranormal, while Scully, a medical doctor, was a big skeptic and is assigned to make scientific analysis of Mulder's discoveries to debunk his work and thus return him to the mainstream cases. Now, he was given the X-Files because of what he was doing in the FBI, and so it was kind of like a punishment almost. Now, keep that in, if you have people that haven't seen that, it's kind of like the reason why he was given that. Now, early in the series, both agents became pawns of a larger conflict and come to trust only each other and very few select people, some of the main characters of the series, like the Smoking Gun people. The agents also discover an agenda of the government to keep the existence of extraterrestrial life a secret, which kind of ties into the first movie.
Right.
They develop a close relationship, which began as platonic.
Right.
But became romantic by the end of the series. In addition to the series-spanning story arc, which was almost like a Monster of the Week episodes, formed virtually two-thirds of all the episodes. Now, here's a little throw out there talking about the original series. There was one episode that was aired once and has never aired again. And you cannot get it on any format.
Really?
Yes. It was such a big controversy that... you know, they were lucky to get it on the air once. Now, what we're going to be talking about is going to be the episode that aired on January 24th. And I do believe it was episode 4?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's called The Lost Art of Forehead Sweat. And I loved it. I mean,
it was marvelous. And it's reflected what was going on in today's world so beautifully.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, my God.
Which I loved. I'm not going to knock it. I mean, of course, I love The X-Files. At the same time, I did lament too much current events in there. And I say that because I can still watch with my now children who are adults. Mm-hmm. I could watch episodes from 1992 or 1993, mm-hmm. you know, early X-Files, and they're still relevant because mm-hmm. they don't put in topical stuff. So I'm not knocking mm-hmm. I'm just saying as a little sidebar here. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm nitpicking because I love the episode.
Well,
so what they did in the episode is they explored the idea of the Mandela effect, which yeah. I heard of by forgotten about.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A quick thing for the people out in their audience. Mandela effect is that people thought that Mandela had died in the 80s. Now, there's people out there that swear that he did, and there's people out there that swear that he was still alive at the time. The same thing with the Bernstein Bears or the Bernstein Bears.
Correct,
now,
yes.
It's just basically what it's saying is that there are fragments of history or fragments of pop culture and other things like that. People remember one way and other people remember another way. Hence the Mandela effect.
Right. It's just large groups of people who remember an alternate history.
Yes.
And so in this episode, Mulder and Scully find out how the X-Files themselves may have really originated.
Now, which was really interesting because they talk about like fake news.
Yes.
And alternate things like this.
Yes.
Which, I can see why, it grounded it in today's happenings where
yes.
our previous episodes were not really reflective of what was going on at the time, but in a way they were still were. I really liked the episode because at the end when the head of the FBI goes, hey, what are they you know, where's he going?
Right. Well, yeah. Mitch Pileggi's character, right? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I've noticed over the years, I mean, his character gets more and more important, but it's still, they don't trust him. You know, that's, it's still an issue with you know, Scully and Mulder. They just really don't.
I wouldn't trust him either. I think he's a pawn, that he's just being chummy with them so they can, he can control them better.
Right. Well, and that's the theme. And that's the beauty of X-Files, is that you have this, you have this push and pull. You know, you have
wheels
the,
and wheels.
Right, you know, absolutely. I mean, and there's so many moving parts too. Yes. You think it's okay, it's just Scully and Mulder and who cares, and there's their boss and that's it. But then as you're literally, to use a Alice in Wonderland metaphor, tumbling down the rabbit hole more and more. And that's the beauty of X-Files. There are standalone episodes where you can just watch and do, and that's the end of it. But then there's the arc of the story, which you need to see some previous episodes to want to understand the others. Now, this episode, Lost Art of Forehead Sweat, is really kind of a standalone series.
But it brings up a lot of old scenes from previous from the original series.
That yes.
They alter a little bit. I'm not, you know
Right. You have to see the episode, right.
But it pulls a lot from the history of the X-Files, which is the beauty of this episode.
Right. I mean, if you want to see, you know, what, you know, David Duchovny looked like in the 90s with his hair and, you know, less wrinkles. And all that, and Dana's, you know, and, you know, Gillian Anderson, she looks different, but she still looks fantastic. I mean, I will say this: I was actually married, pretty much my now ex-wife. She really liked X-Files before me. I saw her watching it, and I was like, "What's the show?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, it's this X-Files. It's like about FBI agents and aliens." And I said, "Really, aliens? Like UFO aliens?" She goes, "Yeah." And then by her saying that, my love of, you know, UFOs, that's when I started watching it on Friday nights on Fox TV. And literally, I sat for one and I was hooked. It took me one episode, I was hooked.
They're exceptionally well written. They're exceptionally well directed. They're exceptionally well acted. It happened at a good time in TV history. It just all the pieces landed together.
Right, and if you remember, if you think of like 1992, 93, the Fox TV network was small, minuscule in the United States and really in North America. And so this is like their big tentpole show. This is like a big show for them. I mean, they had a comedy show. They had, you know, In Living Color, which is a comedy variety show. But this is like a dramatic, this is a very big dramatic, you know, Friday night drama show in a drama slot. And this was drawing a lot of viewers. I mean,
They did take a chance with it. I think I think it's so great that they did, because that changed a lot of things that happened in TV afterwards. Without the X-Files, a lot of other shows couldn't have happened.
Very true. Very true. Absolutely.
They blazed trails.
Yeah, and also it was like what I will say, like NYPD Blue. I know I'm off topic, or like even Miami Vice. They really pushed the envelope in action, in violence, in drama for TV. And X-Files did that, you know, with the bloodiness, with this creatures, you know, with these happenings. And so I just remember, you know, watching the show, you know, years ago, and like, wow, this is very cutting edge for TV. It really is today.
And I made sure that I, you know, back then, you know, there wasn't DVRs and TiVo and streaming and the internet and all that stuff. So yeah, I made sure I was there for every single episode.
You had to watch it live. I mean, or
an effort.
Right. You made an effort. Of course, you could set your VCR.
Yes.
Which, if you had a VCR back then, which is an old tape, you know, a VHS tape back then. Mm-hmm. But I mean, but still, you had to set it. You have to record it, then you have to rewind it. You know, unlike now, we're all spoiled with the DVRs and streaming, what have you.
Yeah, like I watched it on my phone. You know, it's just any time, you know, place. It's just, yeah, we're extremely spoiled by how things are done nowadays.
Yeah.
Now, sadly, you know, the last two seasons were only 10 episodes. So instead of a full season of 23 episodes, there was only 10 and 10.
Well, no, the last season was six, Patrick. Last season was six.
This one is 10,
a run of 10.
Yeah.
And here's the problem. Yeah. And I'm going to cry now, or everyone will cry. Yeah, I know. Gillian Anderson did state, and she said in the press, she will not return to the series. And now the producer has not announced what the series will do. And honestly, for me, you know, that's why, like I said earlier, there's really, without Mulder, there's really no X-Files, in my opinion. I mean, I was, you know, in love with Scully, so to help, but no Scully.
Yeah,
I mean, she's the foil. I mean, she's the counterweight.
The balance, yes. Without that, it just and also it just they very we've seen the series without Mulder,
and it didn't do well. Yeah. It really didn't. It really didn't.
It wasn't the same. Now, if they continue, it's going to be the flip without.
I mean, you can do some things, you know. Obviously, it's really the story is about Fox Mulder, mm-hmm. you know, looking for his sister. Again, I'm sure anybody's listening probably knows the origin of the old series. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is, she was always the skeptic. Now, I'm not saying she's a full skeptic anymore without giving away hints or details, but. You know, like any
balance.
Right. There's, you know, Han Solo, Chewbacca, yes. you know, there was, you know, in Lethal Weapon, you had the two characters, you know, so there's always that yin and yang. And without a major character like that, honestly, I think you should go out and finish it this way. Now, I did say this to you, Patrick, before the podcast, mm-hmm. that I think if they dangle enough money before her, she might be tempted as they've done. But. Who knows?
Well, also, I think it's going to also depend on how well the ratings go. I mean, right now, it's doing well. But what happens if it tapers off and the 10th episode happens and the studio's like, we don't really have the numbers to be able to continue this. Or if they go like, yes, the numbers are here. We're doing fabulous. They back up a huge truck of money in front of her and go like, you want it? And then she could still say no. Do they recast?
No, you can't recast her. You can't. No. But I will say this. I don't want to give away too much, but there's some additional new characters that have been introduced in the last season, season 10, season 11, that could replace Mulder and Scully if need be. The baton could be passed. It would not be the same. It could be passed. But again, you're kind of starting a new story arc. It's like you're starting fresh, and I wouldn't want that. I will say this, Patrick: the 10 episodes, and I'm looking forward to the next one. One, I have the series set on my DVR. I would just say this: you know, you don't want to overplay your hand too much.
You go out on top.
Right, you want to go out on top, and again, if your listeners and yourself have seen the 6 series run from last season. Mm-hmm. And again, without giving away stuff, we can discuss it in another podcast. Right. That honestly, I think they've set up so this episode 10 is the ending. I think there is a finality here.
You're gonna close the door on it.
I think so. I really think so. Now, at least what I've seen so far.
But could they do a standalone movie like they did with the last one? And okay, we've done the series. We're closing the door. We've tied up everything in a nice neat bow. But the fans want more. So do they do a TV movie of the week?
No. I think let's say they close out the series with this series 11 with the 10 episodes. Mm-hmm. I think at that point, to get somebody like Gillian Anderson back, because I've seen many interviews. I've seen her interviewed on BBC News, mm-hmm. and in American press. I think she need like movie money. I think they'd have to do another like movie like in the movie houses, mm-hmm. to get her back. But I think at that point, you know, I'll leave you with this analogy. You know, I love the last Indiana Jones movie. I loved it. I loved it. But again,
Crystal Skull.
Right, King of the Crystal Skull. And there's talk about a fifth one.
They are going to start production in 2019.
Okay, all right. So now I love Harrison Ford. I love Spielberg, Lucas, you know, everybody involved in the last in all those 4 movies. But again, how believable is Indiana Jones as a 70-year-old swashbuckler, right? I'm just saying. So, you know, David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson are younger, of course, mm-hmm. but again, they're getting up there, and again, you know, obviously they're romantically linked now. You know, that's talked about, and we talked about that. Shouldn't be a shock to any, your listeners. So, how much more could they go?
Where do they go with it?
Right. I mean, did they get a divorce? I mean, they're not really married at the hip anymore. Yeah, so again. I think if Jillian's gone, I think, you know what, let's go out on top, do the 10 episodes right, you know, leave us with a fine commentary about mm-hmm. whatever you want, and then if you think there's a door open, mm-hmm. do a movie, mm-hmm. and then that's it. That's my take,
so
that's my opinion.
A finale, if need be, one last ta-da of a movie, and then the door closes, and then everybody does the the
comic cons for the rest of their life. Yes, I mean, there's so much content. I mean, there's two movies already. I mean,
there's books, there's comic books, right. there's a whole bunch right. of other material out there. So if the fans really want it, they can do it in other formats.
Yeah, exactly. And the point is, this is now a 25-year-old series. I mean, obviously not with 25 years worth of content, but it started 25 years ago. So, yeah. At this point, very few franchises can survive, all these rewrites and character change. This is not a soap opera. This isn't Days of Our Lives. I mean, because if it becomes that, it becomes cheesy and cliched. And honestly, I don't want to...
Too much of a formula.
No. I mean, that's why I loved X-Files, because it was such an outlandish topic. When I first saw that episode with my then either fiance or newlywed wife, I was thinking, my God, they're putting my childish dreams of UFOs as a major TV series? Mm-hmm. And I was just dumbfounded. I was literally starstruck by the seriousness of the topic.
Yeah, all the little stories that you had in your head, or you read as a kid, or you experienced the Boo, the Halloween, all that stuff, they did.
Yeah.
They hit all the right notes.
So what else is there? There's not much more to mine. There's not much more to do. They've done these space aliens in the Antarctic. They've done the space aliens with the – they've done chips in the neck.
And the whole bit.
I mean
– there's nothing really left right. to do. So why – don't retread ground.
No.
Now – which kind of winds the whole thing up, is that all things old are new again.
Absolutely.
Yes, because, the Archer Armstrong being brought back as a movie. Man from Uncle.
The TV series
to a movie. And which is going to hopefully do it right with Guy Ritchie for a second one. I hope they have so much success. They do dozens of these. And now with the X-Files. Old things, new again.
It's absolutely. Just
that, yes. So to tie all this thing off with a bow is that what we grew up with is back. And as long as they're able to do it right, we want it to continue.
Yes.
As long as it gives us the same thrills and the same enjoyment that we started with.
Absolutely.
And as soon as it starts deviating from that, or it's not correct, then it's time to...
Hang it up. Time to hang it up.
Put your hat on the hook and walk out the door.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, no. So this has been extremely enjoyable. I'm so glad that, speaking of old things, being back, is I'm so glad that my podcast is back and running again. Now, I want to reiterate that you're able to go to geekculture.online. And find previous episodes and a whole bunch of articles and things like about this. I am going to be putting up a quick posting about everything we talked about with links to everything. Now, you could reach me at patrick@geekculture.online. You could reach Larry at larry@geekculture.online. You can go to our Facebook page.
Like
the Facebook page. We need the likes. And you can also find our Spotify there. You're able to I have several playlists. I have a playlist on there for movie as well as theme and soundtracks from out there and a whole bunch of other things. So please go to Geek Culture Online, no period there, for the Facebook. Our Instagram page has a whole bunch of stuff on there, especially some of the artwork I've been doing, and that's at Geek Culture Online. And now our Twitter account is Your Geek Culture. Please find us there. We're going to be doing a lot more Twittering,
right.
That we've been doing.
The Tweety, on the Tweety, yeah,
so we're gonna
good.
Be tweeting the Twitters, and so you're going to see a lot more activity now that we're back and up and running. Now, I want to thank you again, and I'm Patrick Bolin.
I'm Larry Wojciechowski.
And thank you again for listening to Geek Culture Online.
Talk to you soon, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.